Thanks, Jesse, for a nice introduction, and thanks for inviting me. It's an honor to present my work here. Just people starting, if any of you hear cat meowing on the background, please ignore that. My cat is trying to get in my room. Okay, so today I'd like to talk about the new method to optimally combine spectroscopic and photometric surveys. Okay, let's get started. My talk has a simple structure. First, I will briefly explain Bayesian knowledges and concept, and then I will talk about the DMAT sample, and we show galaxy-galaxy measurement, and lastly, I will show cosmological analysis using the DMAT sample. Okay, let me start with the history of the universe. Let's start with the Big Bang. After Big Bang, the universe keeps expanding. About three decades ago, two supernovae teams found that this expansion is accelerating at late times. Dark energy has been widely accepted as the component that triggers the cosmic acceleration. It accounts for 70% of the universe today, but nobody knows what it is exactly. Current standard cosmological model is called lambda CDM. Lambda is Einstein's cosmological constant. CDM is core dark matter. In lambda CDM model, dark energy is a cosmological constant, which is interpreted as the vacuum energy with negative pressure. The model has had many successes, including being reasonably compatible with observations until now. But it also has shown some weaknesses. When interpreting the cosmological constants as the vacuum energy, it doesn't agree with the magnitude of the vacuum energy predicted by particle physics. So several alternatives have been suggested to trigger cosmic accelerations without introducing the cosmological constant. That includes omega CDM with the omega, which is not equal to minus one, and also time-bearing dark energy, so-called WNWA model, and new gravity. New gravity is shown in bold because later in this talk, I'm going to show our work that tested gravity using the DMAT. Okay, cosmologists use various cosmological probes to test the lambda CDM cosmology or its extensions. First, at early times, we have cosmic microwave background here. After Big Bang, the universe was hot and dense. As it cools down, photons are decoupled from matter and scattered through the space. Cosmic microwave background is just a remnant of the scattered photon at decoupling. As it happened at very early universe, CMB provide information of the early universe that other observational probes do not have. And at late times, where the dark energy dominates, we use galaxies. Galaxy surveys such as ES observe this era. At late times, there are four probes we can use: galaxy clustering, weak lensing, clusters, and supernovae. In particular, we will mainly focus on galaxy clustering and weak lensing. Galaxy clustering is auto galaxy position correlation function, and weak lensing is the deflection of light by foreground matter. Both traces the underlying matter distribution. Let me start with the galaxy clustering. This picture shows the underlying dark matter in green color and galaxies in red color. Galaxies trace the underlying dark matter structure. As we cannot see the dark matter, we have to observe galaxies to infer the matter distribution. Galaxy clustering is easy to measure because it is basically pair counting of dots. But as shown in this picture, you see that galaxies, the red dots, do not trace matter perfectly, because galaxies form at the peak of the dark matter halos. So they are essentially biased tracers. The bias in observation between matter and galaxy is usually expressed as V here. And psi gg, this indicates galaxy correlation function. And sigma 8 here is the amplitude of the matter clustering within the radius of 8 megaparsec. So from this equation, to infer the matter distribution from galaxy clustering, understanding of galaxy bias is required. And another probe we consider here is weak lensing. In the picture on the right, we see that there are round galaxies on the background. And then there are foreground matters or could be foreground galaxies. These foreground matter act like gravitational lens. So the light from the background galaxies traveling through the space is deflected, as shown in the figure. So the observed shape of the background galaxies that we observe are distorted, is shown here. It is not round anymore. And from the distortion, we infer foreground matter distribution. Okay. I think something happened here in this slide. Okay. So estimator for the shape distortions is called cosmic shear. Cosmic shear directly probes the underlying matter distribution, sigma 8 here. It doesn't have galaxy bias. However, the shape distortion is a very subtle effect. It's only a percent level effect, so this is hard to detect. To get a sufficient signal to noise, one needs to average over many galaxies at the pain end where the systematics need to be controlled carefully. sorry, I think slides are messed up. Okay. We also have cross correlation between the two, which is called galaxy lensing here. This one has one galaxy bias here. So it has slightly different dependency on galaxy bias. Our ultimate goal is constraining dark matter distribution, sigma 8. And the combination of these three helps to constrain sigma 8. First, the combination of the two, galaxy clustering, galaxy lensing, this combination is special. Each one has a different dependence on galaxy bias. But when you combine the two, for example, if you scale this galaxy lensing and divide these by this one, then you can cancel the galaxy bias, leaving only the matter, leaving only the sigma 8. Also, the cosmic shear directly measures sigma 8. So when you add this one, then it also helps to break the degeneracy between galaxy bias and sigma 8 in the previous two probes. Okay, now let's talk about the surveys. Spectroscopic survey measures the redshifts of galaxies and draws the 3D galaxy maps. Redshift measured by spectroscopic surveys are very accurate. So spectroscopic survey yields very accurate galaxy clustering measurement. The most well-known spectroscopic survey is BOSE, which is part of the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. And on the right, the photometric survey. this is more like a high resolution two-dimensional photo. We observe weak lensing from the images. Stage three imaging surveys include KITS, CFHT lens, and HSD, and dark energy survey, DS for short. In this work, we use this dark energy survey. And in the next couple of slides, I will briefly explain both and DS surveys. Okay. So BOSE survey is the largest spectroscopic survey so far. It covers 10,000 degrees gear and observes 1.5 million red luminous galaxies. And it almost 90% galaxies have spectroscopy redshift. And BOSE surveys has two galaxy samples, LOWZ that covers low redshift up to 0.4, and CMS that covers medium redshift up to 0.7. In this work, we were specifically focused on the CMS sample. CMS sample has really large sample size and large coverage, and it also has accurate redshift. And thanks to these properties, CMS galaxies has been widely used as the foreground lens. Okay, the next one is Dark Energy Survey, DES for short. This is the large photometric survey covering roughly 5,000 degrees scale, the southern sky. The precision of the DS photometry and the size of the survey area is the best among the stage three imaging surveys. The photometry data set has been obtained in bi-band, grazy bands, and this survey can observe very faint galaxies up to 24 eV magnitude. Recently, DS year three analysis research were out with roughly 30 papers. The right plot is the key figure of their works. The black contour is the DS 3x2 point data vector only, and the green is contour, and orange is the external late time probes. And the combination of everything is the blue contour here. Compared to the DS year one, DS year three improves the constraint on S8, which is kind of least squared matter clustering amplitude, similar to sigma 8. The DS year three improves this constraint by a factor of 2.1, and the result is consistent with Planck in non-Dasilian. Okay, now we're done with the intro, and I'm going to explain about the DMET. This map shows the footprint of both and various photometric surveys that I mentioned earlier. The blue and cyan color here and here, these are both footprint. And then photometric surveys are present in different colors. Most surveys are on the both footprint because they want to utilize both spectroscopic galaxies or use it as a foreground lens. The magenta color is KIDS. KIDS is also on the both footprint. HSD on the Bose footprint, CF-based D lens, it's also on the Bose footprint. The only exception is DES, which is the green color. Okay, DES has the largest survey area with a high resolution, so we should expect very strong constraining power when combined with Bose. The problem is, unlike other surveys, it does not fully overlap with Bose. So the overlap between Bose and DS is here, only here, it's roughly about 100 degrees scale, which means if you want to use Bose galaxies as foreground lens and want to do a 3x2 point analysis, then we have to draw out the rest of the DS area. This DMS project started from this point. If you can make Bose like galaxies in a full DS area, outside of overlapping area, then we can utilize the full area of the DS by using the Bose-like galaxies as foreground lens. And we'll be able to easily combine with the Bose galaxy clustering measurement and cancel the galaxy bias. So the idea is in this overlap, we can investigate how Bose galaxies would look like in the DS color system, right? And we use that information from the overlapping area to find both like galaxies in the rest of the DS region beyond the overlapping area. This is the whole idea. In this slide, I will briefly summarize the outline of the DMS selection algorithm and the resulting DMS sample. As I mentioned earlier, both survey has two galaxy samples, LOWZ and CMS. And this work specifically target the high redshift sample CMS. The name of our sample name, DMS, means actually the DS version of CMS. So DMS for short. This figure shows the full DS footprint. The colored region, is DS year one area. So the wrong band at the top this year overlaps with the bull survey area. We start at this overlap. In the overlapping area, we can see how the CMS would look like in the DS photometry. We train our algorithm here. We first match CMS and DS catalog by position and obtain the DS color distribution of CMS galaxies, which is in the top right corner. This is the color and magnitude distribution of CMS in the DS photometry. So already the axes, R and I magnitude and GR color and RI color. after we obtain that, then the algorithm fits this color distribution with the n-dimensional Gaussian mixture model. Then the best fitted Gaussian model is applied to the rest of the DS area in this region and assign the kind of CMS membership probability to each DS galaxy. That's how the system works. Currently the DMAT sample covers only the DS year one area, which is about 1,200 square degree. Vivoli Warner, a graduate student at OSU, is currently working on making the year three version of DMAT with the latest DS year three data. Okay, to validate the resulting DMAT sample, we perform various comparison tests with both CMS, including number density, color distribution, redshift distribution, galaxy clustering, galaxy bias, and et cetera. And today I will show only two of these. You can find the full test in the paper here. Before getting in detail, I think mentioning this first would be helpful. So both consist of two footprints. Gigantic area in North Galactic Cap, actually these two area is connected, is continuous area. This is called NGC, and it also has a relatively small area called South Galactic Cap. Overlap with DES is in the South Galactic Cap here, so the algorithm is basically trained with DMAS in South Galactic Cap. So when we validate DMAS, we always compare DMAS both with CMS subscript of the cap and the full CMS sample. Okay. Going back to the plots. The first one is angular correlation function. We compare angular correlation function of DMS with CMS in subscript of the cap and full CMS. Blue is CMS in South Galactic Cap, and DMS is red and orange. You might want to compare orange and blue. And then the bottom panel shows the residuals between DMS and CMS. So the blue is residuals with the CMS in South Galactic Cap, and black is with the full CMS sample. And you can see that both are consistent with zero, which means basically in galaxy correlation function, they agree with each other. And the right panel shows a galaxy bias difference. This is important test because what we want to do ultimately is combine both galaxy clustering and DMS J/2 and then cancel galaxy bias, right? So to cancel galaxy bias and leave sigma 8 only, galaxy bias of DMS and DMS should be the same. So if you see the plot, x-axis shows the difference in galaxy bias between two samples, and zero here vertical line, this shows no difference case. And the blue posterior shows the comparison between DMS and CMS in subscale of the cap. You see that this is consistent with zero very well. And the black posterior is comparison between DMS and the full CMS. This is also consistent with zero within one sigma. Comparison with CMS in subscale of the cap shows a better agreement with the full CMS than the full CMS case. which makes sense because the algorithm is trained in the soft scale of the cap, as I mentioned earlier. And the final posterior, the red one, this is the bias difference between CMS in south scale of the cap and CMS in north scale of the cap. So CMS has an intrinsic difference between two regions in galaxy bias. So both paper mentioned about that. It says that this is due to the color offset of the SDSS data release 8 photometry between the two regions. So this could be due to either the calibration error or errors in the galactic extinction correction, or could be the combination of both. So this yields a few percent of difference in galaxy bias, as shown in red. Roughly, I think it's roughly 5%. The difference between DMS and the first DMS is you see that those two are between the red posterior peak point and the zero vertical line. So the difference between DMS and first DMS is even less than the intrinsic difference of DMS, which means that DMS agrees with DMS very, very well. Okay. okay, so next one is galaxy-galaxy lensing. After the sample is characterized, as I mentioned earlier, we measure the galaxy-galaxy lensing measurement using the DMS as foreground lens. We use the mean tangential shear as an estimator for galaxy-galaxy lensing. So this is basically the ensemble average of the ellipticity of the source galaxy in the tangential direction. So you see that the theoretical expression for the tangential shear, this is basically the Fourier transform of the galaxy matter angular power spectra. The definition is also written below. And then galaxy bias enters here. And then RCC here, this is the cross correlation coefficient between matter and galaxy. So on large scales, the matter and galaxy density fields are fully correlated. So the relation between the two fields is simply a linear galaxy bias with R, with the parameter RCC equals one. We already know that. But on small scales, the relation is more complex. So this parameter RCC has been originally used to incorporate the complicated correlations between the two fields on small scales. So here we borrow this concept to Baudet DMS. We define the combination of BG RCC equals to B gamma. B gamma is actually stands for the galaxy bias from galaxy-galaxy lensing. So we call it a galaxy lensing bias. And BG is basically constrained by galaxy clustering. So we call it as a clustering galaxy bias. Then from this equation, we can define RCC as the ratio of the two galaxy biases. So since the galaxy-galaxy lensing, so we use DMS for weak lensing. So this is basically from, this could be the galaxy bias of DMS. And BG is from the Bose clustering. So this is basically galaxy bias of DMS. So in our work, RCC is not used for its original meaning, number one. It is rather used as the barometer indicating the consistency between the two traces. So if DMS and CMS agrees with each other, then RCC will be consistent with one. Okay, this is our measurement of the galaxy-galaxy lensing. So the plot on the left is the redshift distribution of lens and source. The red is DMS, and then gray is source. We didn't split the DMS, so there is only one lens beam. And then for the source, we use DSER1 shape catalog. Sources are split into four redshift beams, so which result in the total four galaxy-galaxy lensing signals on the right. You have the right panel. Is the measurement. The solid lines are the theoretical predictions for CMS. And error bars are our measurement. And our measurement of CMS agrees with the predictions for CMS very well. And we combined the tangential shear measurement in the previous slide with the galaxy clustering measurement from both CMS to derive the constraint on RCC. So we used the measurement from Chuang et al. 2017 here. They measured the pre-shape function of both CMS galaxy sample and obtained the constraints of those parameters in the box. We used those five constraints in the box and corresponding covariance matrix provided by their work. B here is clustering galaxy. I think somebody raised their hand, but I didn't see the name, sorry.
Yeah, so on the previous slide, could you explain a little the slide with the N of Z? My question was about this slide here. Could you explain a little what these points on the left panel are, what the error bars are? And in particular, I was curious what you're assuming. Right. I was just curious what you're assuming for the redshift distribution of the DMAS sample is, how are you characterizing the uncertainty on that after this selection? And is that propagated into the analysis in any way? Could you tell me a little bit more about the redshift distribution for DMAS, essentially, is what I'm asking.
Okay. So basically, the shaded red region, this is the CMS redshift distribution, and this error bar we point, this is the DMAS redshift distribution, and we used the red DS red magic galaxies to characterize the redshift distribution of DMAS. So in the DS year one, to obtain the to calibrate the redshift distribution of length sample, what DS people do is they cross correlate the both spectroscopic galaxies with the red magic. We use the same technique, but we don't have spectroscopic galaxies to cross correlate. So instead, we use red magic. Red magic is photometric sample, but it has a better photometric redshift than the ordinary photometric sample. So we utilize red magic and did cross correlate. Did cross correlation with the DMAS sample, and then using the same technique used in the DSR1, just computed this clustering G redshift. Yeah, but for the whole analysis, we know that the size scale computed with the CMS spectroscopy redshift and this DMAS clustering G is very good. So for the whole analysis, we simply use the CMS spectroscopy redshift. Did I answer your question?
Okay, so what you're showing here is the uncertainty on the redshift distribution you get from clustering redshift from cross correlation with red magic, but you're saying you don't propagate that uncertainty into the analysis. You just fix it to the CMAS one because it looks like it agrees reasonably well. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, okay. Yes. Actually, yeah, we added one more uncertainty, which is the mean redshift bias, which is also characterized, which is also determined by the clustering G. So with the shape of the CMS spectroscopy redshift, we allow the location of the mean redshift to vary. So it also changes with, it introduces uncertainty, yeah.
Thank you.
Wait, sorry. So yeah, okay, just to follow up on that, so you guys have not gotten any kind of, follow-up, spectroscopy, to confirm the redshift distribution? This is only just the clustering redshifts?
Yes, actually we don't have any resources to validate these with spectroscopy redshift because there is no spectroscopy sample.
Okay, so on the right-hand plot then, so these blue points you're showing, there are redshifts that are supposed to be less than the CMAS redshifts. And yet you are still finding a pretty significant cross correlation. I mean, in this year. So presumably, I guess that means that you do actually have, lens galaxies whose redshifts are well below, you know, like the lowest redshift of the CMAS sample. Is that the way that I should interpret this?
Are you talking about this red? Are you talking about this blue line?
Right. So your blue points, right. So they're supposed to be redshifts less than 0.4 something, which is like the lowest redshift of CMAS.
So what you're trying to say is that the lowest signal actually should be almost close to zero.
Right, because the source is supposed to be in front of the lenses, right?
Yeah, but they overlap here, and then our mean transition shear take account for this overlap between these. So this signal is basically from this overlapping area.
Oh, okay. Like, so you're saying that like the, like the tail of the red curve, you're saying like it overlaps enough with that blue bin to give you a significantly non-zero predicted shear. Okay.
Yes. That's what I was trying to say. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. I think I was here before. Okay. So we use the Chuang et al. Data sets, and it provides these five parameters and the covariance matrix. And then you see here, this is the galaxy bias. So we can call this as a galaxy clustering bias. By combining the transition measurement in the previous slide with this data set, we try to constrain RCC value to check if RCC is consistent with one. So on the right, there is a triangular plot for two galaxy biases and the resulting RCC value. And you may want to check the contour here that the red arrow is pointing. This is RCC BG contour. The dashed line, this one, are the ideal cases where the lensing galaxy bias is equal to the clustering galaxy bias. And we also tested the two different scale cuts just to make sure we cut out nonlinear scales. So for both cases, you see that RCC, basically RCC is consistent with one, although the formula plastic case slightly favors higher RCC, but basically they are still within one sigma. So this could be another evidence that CMAS can be used as gravitational lens equivalent to the Bose CMAS. This is the last part. So from this point, using the two-point function measurements, I show how we constrain cosmology. Okay, now we have a complete set of CMAS data. Galaxy clustering and galaxy of lensing. And this is cosmic shear measurement from the DS year one analysis. We call the combination of these three signals as DMAS 3x2-point data. Not only combining these three data sets, we will also combine these with the both CMAS galaxy clustering and see if we can effectively break the degeneracy between galaxy bias and sigma 8. We test the performance of DMAS in the framework of modified gravity. The reason we use this frame is that modified gravity parameters are strongly degenerate with galaxy bias. And the gain from this combining method is mostly from the shared galaxy bias parameter constrained by both spectroscopic and photometric data set. So we expect the largest improvement in the modified gravity. We are going to use the phenomenological approach. This approach, this has an advantage in the sense that it does not require exact knowledge of the specific alternative theory, but this is still able to capture a generic deviation from MSCDM. So it's pretty convenient. So from the data, what we can only say is that our data tells if general relativity is correct or not. We cannot go further than that. But this is enough for us in this work because we are mainly interested in how sensitive DMAT is to MG. So we are all interested in the size of the contour. So these two equations are the perturbative Einstein equation. Psi is the Newtonian potential that governs matter. And this psi plus pi, this is the wave potential that governs the deflection of light. And then two modified gravity parameters enters in the equation. So mu implies.
There's a hand up from Subhadeep.
Yes. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that.
No, it's no problem. Thanks, Lucy, for observing it. Sion, I have a question regarding this part. I'm slightly confused with the notations you're using. So when you define RC as a ratio of these bias parameters and you try to constrain it, what is the correlation or degeneracy with that parameter, which is kind of a nuisance parameter, with the parameters of modified gravity now you are defining?
So in the galaxy lensing measurement, it is only for validating DMAS. So for this part, there's no modified gravity yet. This is done in lambda stadium.
Yep. No, when you are now introducing the modified gravity parameters, then
yes,
won't then be a problem with your this overall bias ratios? I can get anything I want to make it one.
Also, your question is how the galaxy bias is degenerated with these modified gravity parameters.
Right. Yes. How RC is degenerated with mu and sigma basically.
You're not talking about RCC in the previous slide, right?
Right.
You're talking about RCC?
RCC, I am asking how RC is degenerate with mu and sigma.
So in this part, there's no RCC anymore because for the modified gravity, I should have mentioned earlier, but here in this modified gravity, we cut out nonlinear scales to make sure that we are using sufficiently large scales. But RCC only shows up on small scales where the nonlinearity is strong. So on large scales, we know the RCC equals one.
Right. Okay. So you are just using the large scale information here. Okay, fine. Thank you.
Yes. So those two parameters enter into the equations. So here mu So mu implies the modifications to the structure growth because it's connected to the Newtonian potential and sigma governs the diffraction of light, indicates the modification to the deflection of light. And in general relativity, this both goes to zero and the whole equation goes back to the ordinary normal Einstein perturbative equations. These are the data sets we use. Web scale, this one is the DMAS 3x2 point measurement. And along with the DMAS measurement, we use the constraints derived from the galaxy crossing measurement of Bostiness, the same Chuang et al. Data sets. So this, as I mentioned earlier, this data set include the combination of galaxy bias and sigma 8. This is clustering galaxy bias. So as we have proven that the DMAS galaxy bias is consistent with that of CMAS, so we will treat these and galaxy bias in DMAS. We treat these and galaxy bias in DMAS as the same parameter. So they are going to vary as a one parameter. Basically it's the same galaxy bias parameter. And we added Planck CMB data to constrain the early universe. So these are the constraints on modified gravity from various combinations of the data sets. Our work with DMAS is colored in yellow. To check the efficiency of the DMAS, we compare our result with other cases using different lens. And the different lens is this DS-EL1 RadMagic sample. So DS-EL1 RadMagic consists of 5 tomographic beams as shown in this plot. And the number density of the RadMagic is much higher than DMS. Except for the lens setting, sources, and other external data sets are exactly the same. So if you see the figure here, then purple color is RadMagic result. The difference between yellow contours and purple contours is only the lens sample. So orange use DMS lens and purple use RadMagic sample. Other conditions are just the same. And you find that DMS result is tighter than RadMagic by 29% for mu and 20% for sigma, despite the lower number density and less tomographic beams of DMS. As I mentioned earlier, I think most of gain in DMS comes from the shared galaxy bias parameter. Okay, this optimal combining method in this work can be applied to future surveys having a limited overlap. DESI and LSSD can be the perfect candidate for this kind of method. DESI has 3 galaxy samples, PGS, a bright galaxy sample, LRG, luminous red galaxies, and ERG emission line galaxies. Those are presented in the here redshift distribution plot.
Oh, wait, sorry. Can I ask, I missed on the previous slide, what was the reason again, that you mentioned for why the contours were smaller?
This is because galaxy bias is shared. So for the RadMagic, each bean has a galaxy bias, and also it is also combined with both CMS galaxy strings. So CMS galaxy bias is treated as additional parameter. But in our work, we know that DMS and CMS has the same galaxy bias. So we have only one distance parameter. So I mean, galaxy bias is shared. They vary together as a one parameter. So it reduces the uncertainty a lot. Does that make sense? Okay,
you're saying, yeah, sorry. Yeah, so I'm still missing something, I guess. You're comparing to RadMagic.
Yes.
On that other slide, and you're saying that for CMAS you have fewer bias parameters.
Yes.
Than RadMagic. Why is that again?
Okay, let me explain those briefly again. So, let's see. So the basic idea is that galaxy bias, there is only one galaxy bias for DMS, and there is also CMS galaxy bias in these data sets. So if DMS and CMS are different, then we have 2 galaxy bias, right? And for the But we know that DMS and CMS are same. So we just bury them together. It's basically, so R has only one galaxy bias, distance parameter. But for RadMagic cases, we know that their lens in the 3x2 point and CMS are not the same. So they have, so each sample has their own galaxy bias parameters. So more galaxy bias parameters means more uncertainty. So technically, RadMagic has higher number density and it has more tomographic beams covering from 0 to, it covers broader redshift range than CMS, and DMS that covers only the medium redshift. But CMS achieve roughly 30% better result than RadMagic. Does that make sense? So basically it's R because introducing more additional distance parameters or not. And by sharing the galaxy bias, DMS work can reduce the number of distance parameters. And the galaxy bias is one of the distance parameters that has the largest uncertainties in cosmological analysis. So reducing the number of galaxy bias parameters is really important to reduce the overall uncertainty in cosmological analysis. I'm not sure it does answer your question.
I think I'm still missing why it's different for red magic. But maybe I can ask you about it afterwards. Yeah.
Okay. Then for now I will just go proceed. So I was probably explaining about the Deji galaxy samples. Yeah, Deji has these three galaxy samples. So we can use the same technique for Deji and LSST. So if there are the equivalent samples to those of Deji in the LSST area beyond the overlapping area, then we can combine Deji and LSST in the same manner as I did for the DMS work. And can extract the full statistical power LSST beyond the overlapping area. So these are very preliminary results. These are the Fisher forecasts for lambda CDM, Devon under VA, and modified gravity forecast. Here I consider only three data sets, 3 by 2 point data sets, using LSST Deji sample as foreground lens, and Deji clustering, and then Planck. These three data sets are considered. And then basically blue control is 3 by 2 point only, and orange is Deji galaxy clustering is added, and red color is when Planck is added. So I mean, when all data sets are included. And the black dashed line black contour shows the external data sets only without the 3 by 2 point data. So when adding the external data to the 3 by 2 point, we see moderate improvement in lambda CDM and Durbin and WA. And then for the modified gravity case, both blue and black dashed contours are quite large, but when we combine the two, then contour shrinks a lot. So we expect sharing the galaxy bias parameter is most effective in modified gravity in particular. And instead of just waiting for the future data to come out, we can do more work with the currently available data sets. So we believe Warner at OSU is working on the constructing the year 3 version of the DMS catalog covering the full DS area. So this new catalog will cover 3 times larger area than the DMS year 1 work. So we expect the DMS year 3 would have sufficient constraining power for the small scale analysis. So there is a famous cleansing as low effect happening in CMS, which is that on small scales, the galaxy-galaxy lensing signal around the CMS is lower by 20% than predictions from various simulations. So many follow-up work have been done to figure out what makes the discrepancy, but we don't have clue yet. And I think DMS year 3 would help to find out what's causing the issue. Also, the same technique can be applied to the EBOS data as well. I don't have a plot here though, but we have a very preliminary version of DS EBOS ERG catalog. We've only tested the angular clustering measurement, but the measurement is very promising. They show the good agreement. So once it completes, we can use the same method for higher ratio, higher than CMS can cover. Okay, these are summary and takeaways. There are more rooms to improve, so please stay tuned. So I think that's all I have to say today, and I think I'm ready to take questions.
Thank you, Sue. I'll give Sue, I guess, a virtual round of applause here. Are there more questions?
Well, yeah, okay. Well, maybe I can just just follow up on the thing I was confused about. So it sounded like you were saying that the reason why your constraints are better is that you're assuming that the DMAS bias is the same as a CMAS bias, which is measured by BOSS. Was that right?
Yes, basically they are same. And the point is, the number of distance parameters are reduced when they are same.
Right. But the assumption though you're making is that the biases are the same and that BOSS has already measured the bias for you. But just given that you haven't actually, you know, directly spectroscopically confirmed your redshifts, that seems like a risky assumption to make, I guess.
You mean assuming that they are the same?
Right.
Well, the bias is still freed up here, right? It's not. Is that right, Sujan? No. Like, I think you're just assuming that the bias of the two samples is the same, but it's still freed up completely with no prior.
Yes, they are still free. They are still free, but work as just one parameter. But this one parameter is still free. So they are So this is marginalized in the cosmological analysis.
I still wonder whether, you know, assuming that it's the same bias is a bit of a strong assumption, in the sense that this mapping that you get from the original sample to your DMAS sample, that's a noisy mapping, right? For like, if I imagine just wiggling around the photometric fluxes or whatever features you're using to train this algorithm, and then if I just, you know, There should be someone. I would get a slightly different sample every time I wiggle around those uncertain things, like the photometric fluxes or the redshifts or the photometric redshifts that are measured. But that's not propagated through here, right? You wouldn't expect the bias to be exactly the same, and in a similar way, you wouldn't expect the redshift distribution to be exactly the same as CMAS. And I feel like those are two uncertainties that are just not propagated fully in this analysis. Would you agree?
So the criteria we set for the agreement of Jarlath bias is that we thought that if the galaxy bias, two galaxy biases are agreed within the statistical uncertainty of both mass galaxy clustering plus DS year one, then that will be enough. And that includes the redshift uncertainty as well. So it doesn't need to be very perfectly same. As long as they are just agreed within the statistical uncertainty, then that should be fine. Because we cannot, even if they are different within the uncertainty from the data set, we never can distinguish. Does that make sense?
Right, but the likelihood that you built here assumes that there is no uncertainty in the difference between those two samples, right? At least in terms of the galaxy bias and the redshift distribution, they're the same for the two samples, right?
Sue, maybe you could clarify. You mentioned that you include a nuisance parameter that lets you shift the mean redshift, like that slides the DMAS redshift bin around in mean redshift. Is that part of your fiducial analysis, or is that a robustness check? And do you have a sense of like how robust your results are to the prior you put on that redshift nuisance parameter?
Are you talking about
the delta Z?
Delta Z is actually not here, but it's a free parameter as well. It's actually, it is not included here, but so we also have plot for this galaxy bias difference and redshift uncertainty, so they vary together. So, and even though we vary those together at the same time, They agree with the fiducial value within one sigma. Sorry, does this answer your question? I'm not sure. Yeah. I fully understand.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, just to clarify, so both, so in your cosmology analysis, mm-hmm. there, you don't vary a delta B parameter, but when you say delta Z isn't included, do you mean it's just not included in the plots, or you assume delta Z equals zero?
It varies together, but it is not included in the plot. It varies together. Okay.
Okay, but is this delta B also marginalized over in your final DMass constraints? No, it's not, right?
No, it is not.
Right, yeah. And so Matt's point, I guess, you know, is that perhaps like the reason why your constraints are tighter, you know, using this DMass versus red magic, just is that you haven't propagated this, you know, this uncertainty on this delta B. And if you did so, then perhaps it might be then similar constraints as, you know, as the previous red magic constraints.
But if you vary delta B, if you vary delta B, that is exactly the same with just having two separate galaxy biases. So we can assume that they are same and can use only one galaxy biases because the difference is already within the one sigma 8. So we never see the difference with the data set. That's why we can just use one galaxy bias. So it doesn't, we don't need to use delta B, what I mean, because we don't, how do I say?
I agree that if you marginalize your delta B, you would lose all of that power completely. But maybe there's something intermediate you can do where you know what the uncertainty in going from the original full sample to the DMass sample is. I feel like that step could use an uncertainty calculation. I'm not being very precise here, but this is a really great talk to add from. But thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so just keeping an eye on the time. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sue.
I mean, I was just trying to say that it'll be great if we can talk about this later this talk, if you have more time after this.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I don't know if there's a venue, but I am sure I'm happy to facilitate putting anyone in touch with Sue who wants to chat with her after this. But yeah, given the time, we should wrap up. Thank you all for attending, and thank you, Sue, for sharing your work with us. It's great having you here virtually.
Thank you so much.